Hello, welcome, and this is Liberty Southwest podcast number 39. Today's date is January 5th, 2015. This week we're talking about the innovative engineer and entrepreneur Elon Musk. Some of his big ideas have and continue to affect areas such as the automotive sector, rocket design, and morphing human biology, along with computer technology into what has been coined the singularity. And also his solar panel business. But, oh yeah. Also, tonight we are joined with Eric Taylor, Danny Ning, and myself, Kirk Pettis. Eric, why don't you take it away?
Yep. So, this is something we were brainstorming last week on, you know, the topic. And Elon Musk is interesting for a bunch of reasons. His political views aren't exactly straight down the libertarian path. He kind of straddles bunch of different angles there, but he's a guy who built a fortune in the late 90s off of a company called Zip2, which was an early website that was utilized by large newspapers for city guide purposes, so they can, you know, they could throw in advertisements for and ratings for restaurants and, you know, various retail shops and that type of thing. He made a couple hundred million there. He threw money into XCOM, which was an early banking platform that merged with PayPal. And
an internet banking platform.
What's that?
An internet banking platform.
Right. Yep. Internet banking was platform and was purchased by PayPal, at which point he took his fortune from that, which was around $165 million, and threw it into a couple of companies, SpaceX, which is a private space exploration company, and they've actually their business model is to manufacture, or actually design, manufacture, and fly rocket systems. And his dream in SpaceX is, he stated, as being to eventually reach Mars, and views it as a launching point to potentially, you know, colonize other planets. That's really the goal of the company. Actually, they have a flight going up to the International Space Station tomorrow. It would be the second successful flight for them to the space station. The other one was a couple years ago. Then also threw a substantial amount of money into Tesla Motors, which is a company that specializes in electronic cars, battery-powered cars, and they've done pretty well. Specifically over the last 3 or 4 years, they're starting to gain traction, and they went public a few years ago, and that's where the majority of his fortune, which is over $8 billion, comes from. And his other company he's the chief executive officer of is Solar City. And what that company does is they compete with power utilities in a handful of states, primarily in the southern part of the United States. And they install solar panels for free and sell energy to customers below the cost of local utilities, and then actually sell any surplus energy back onto the public power grid. And it's actually been pretty successful. That's who he is, and he's a little controversial in libertarian circles because he has pretty close relationships with government entities. You know, specifically when talking about SpaceX, they have a $1.5 billion contract with NASA, and he certainly had to utilize lobbying and resources to secure that contract. He beat out Hughes and Boeing for that contract. And then, you know, also with Solar City butting up right against, you know, public utilities in that area. So that's kind of a high level overview of Elon Musk and probably what we'll cover today. I don't know. You have anything else to add to that, Kirk or Danny?
Not really. I'm just wondering if Tesla is actually making money now, because, you know, they were losing money for quite a bit, and I haven't looked into their financials for quite some time. I'm just wondering if they're actually making a net profit, or are they still operating at a loss right now? I'm not sure either of you guys know.
I believe they're operating at a loss still. Can look that up. Yes.
So people are still buying the hype. I mean, it's, yeah, so people are still buying the hype of the company then.
Yeah, they went through a substantial public IPO, and they've had offerings since. So they've raised plenty of capital, their last quarter they lost $62 million. And you know, I think that's a concern that the market has with them in general. Obviously the market doesn't like to see a company operate at a loss, you know, for an extended
period. Yeah, but it's not a loss without sales. I mean, so in the business financial world, you can write off a lot of stuff because you really want them to be operating at a loss. You don't have to pay any taxes that way. Your tax liabilities is really low. So, but as a public, you know, share as from a public company, you eventually it's forecasted to make a profit. Mm-hmm. So that's why there's that. The price is pretty high for it. So. I mean, so they do have, you know, a good amount of revenue coming in, but because of their R&D, they end up spending so much, which, and, you know, can be depreciated out, and so, which it makes it better for now, and then that much better for in the future when they don't have to do as much R&D, and they can just focus more on a profit. So that would be my guess, without diving into the numbers too much.
Yeah, and they're building out specifically their battery infrastructure. They reached a pretty substantial agreement with Panasonic to build what are called gigafactories, and that's kind of their focus is building out a distribution network. And they've run into problems with, you know, a lot of the existing car manufacturers have really pushed back in a number of states and tried to prevent Tesla from selling vehicles in states. But they've been pretty successful in navigating that area, and then just building out plant infrastructure. And I think really their end goal is to produce quality vehicles under the $30,000 price point that, you know, a large chunk of consumers can afford. So I think they're really getting, processes and infrastructure and distribution in place, which, you know, that costs money, along with what Kirk said, R&D. Danny, are you kind of skeptical as to whether they can be successful long term, or?
I don't know, because maybe we're just kind of taking this topic offhand a little bit, but just kind of talk about the economic side of this. I mean, we're seeing gas prices continuously falling. It's likely going to fall continuously through 2015 just because, you know, simple economics that, you know, the supply for oil just, you know, is just outweighs the demand right now. So, and it doesn't seem like OPEC can do anything about that right now. So it's probably going to – oil, gas prices is probably going to go up probably later 2015 and, you know, maybe 2016 from a lot of analysts that I listen to and a lot of people talking about it. But, you know, with gas prices decreasing, people probably don't really care as much. you know, I'm sure that's helped. That's kind of hurting the Tesla stock prices a little bit. And also, like other competitors, like Toyota is really trying to get into this business as well. They're trying to, you know, make cars that, you know, doesn't run any fuel as well. So, so, and, you know, obviously Toyota has a much, much bigger market share and they have the necessary resources. And I think they already started patenting a lot of fuel cells for developing their new electric car. So I don't know. It's, you know, Tesla's, you know, it's great. You know, I made quite a bit of money from Tesla's lost stock in the past, but, you know, but to me, it just seems like it's still all hype to me. But no, I'm not saying it's a bad car, but I don't know. It's hard to tell. I just don't see that they will ever reach their full potential. But I don't know. SpaceX might.
And that's kind of, that seems to be, I mean, we'll probably come across that. That's kind of the common theme that you see with the current three companies that Elon Musk is a chair of. You know, you have Tesla, which is a scrappy startup. He really views, you know, their secret sauce as being the focus on innovation and, you know, pushing technology forward. And you have SpaceX, which is, has won a substantial government contract over entrenched, you know, aeronautic companies, you know, Boeing and Hughes. You know, he really believes that, you know, it's got the edge in innovation and enthusiasm. And, you know, we could probably have some clips where, you know, a lot of the engineers that are attracted to these startups aren't your typical engineers that you'd find at a Toyota or, you know, at General Mills or excuse me, not General Mills, General Motors, a Ford or, you know, or a Boeing. And then Solar City, you know, is going up against entrenched large public utilities. So there's kind of that theme, you know, and all, you know, that culture in all three of his companies that, you know, it's really in each scenario, it's kind of David versus Goliath. And the guy has a steadfast belief that, you know, through sheer determination and innovation that they can produce the best product in each category. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, in any three instances, you know, if there's success and if the past is any barometer to the future, he's had success in the past. You know, the track record is pretty good. And he's grown, those three companies at a pretty decent clip. And you know, if you look at, I mean, if you look at, I'm looking at the stock chart of Tesla, they went public in 2010 at $20 and change. It's now worth $210. That's a 994% increase in 5 years. Even over the last year, it's up 40%. And you know, that I think I kind of agree with you, Danny. There's almost like a Elon Musk mystique where, you know, associated with an enterprise, people at least now have a tendency to think, well, this thing's probably going to work, right?
Right. And here's like, it's like going from $20 to like $200. It's like, it's just crazy. This company's not making any money. And yet, you know, it's all this hype is like, oh, well, Tesla is going to be, you know, the future of cars and, you know, people are buying into this idea. Then yeah, obviously the stock price is still going to, you know, maintain at its high, but you know, it just seems like it's already been like years and years. It's over. It's been like, when did they start? I feel like it's been like at least a decade this company's been around.
Actually, 2003.
2003. So yeah. About 10, 11 years now. So, and the first car, you know, we're still not seeing this company making any real hard profits. And yeah, there's probably losses and things like that, you know, that they're taking advantage of and things like that. But, you know, you would think you would see this company that kind of starts stabilizing a bit, not continuously taking these losses. But so I don't know. So, and SpaceX is still not public, so that's kind of hard to measure. And Solar City, I don't know much about Solar City either, but that I think their stock price is about $50, but yeah, it's probably like the same thing with Tesla too. I don't know. I don't know if you guys have anything to add with Solar City.
What's Solar City look like? Yeah, they're on 50, and they're up. They went public December 2012.
They don't even make money either.
Yeah, they don't make money.
They don't have a PE ratio.
Yeah, they're up 326%. They went public at 1070 or so. They're at 5006. So you have, and they don't make money, like Kirk said, they don't either. So there's I think that's where most of his wealth has come from. The recent IPOs, you know, over the last four and two years, and they both are definitely in the red. And my gut, and maybe it's, you know, kind of that hype like you're talking about, Danny. It seems to me like if they've got a fighting chance of, you know, being good, profitable companies eventually. With that, I have a clip that kind of goes over specifically SpaceX in pretty decent detail. And I think a lot of what's said about SpaceX could apply to Tesla, and we can go into another Tesla clip. But I'll roll this clip, and if you guys want me to stop it, just let me know. Otherwise, I'll stop it at various times.
In the history of spaceflight, only four entities have launched a space capsule into orbit and successfully brought it back to the Earth: the United States, Russia, China, and Elon Musk. Mr. Musk is a wealthy internet entrepreneur who has vowed to revolutionize space exploration by bringing down the astronomical costs. And that can't happen fast enough for NASA, which retired the shuttle last summer and now has to pay its old rival Russia to fly American astronauts into space. Musk is one of the contenders vying for a NASA contract to build America's next manned spacecraft, a contest he believes he has the right stuff to win.
The story will continue in a moment.
Or sooner than that.
When the final shuttle mission ended last July, for the first time in three decades, the United States had no way to launch astronauts into space. It was the end of one era and the beginning of another. Instead of NASA designing the next manned spacecraft, the White House decided that private industry should design, build, and fly it, opening space to commercial development. One of the companies vying for that contract is SpaceX. Elon Musk is the founder and CEO.
Is what we are experiencing at this moment in time the turning point in man's reach for space, going from governments to private companies like yours?
I think we're at the dawn of a new era, and it's I think it's going to be very exciting. What we're hoping to do with SpaceX is to push the envelope and provide a reason for people to be excited and inspired to be human.
Musk is 40 years old, a naturalized American citizen, and reportedly worth nearly $2 billion. He isn't your typical corporate CEO. As a teenager, he wrote computer games in his native South Africa before immigrating to the U.S. and to Silicon Valley, where he was one of the most successful internet entrepreneurs, the co-founder of PayPal.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Elon Musk!
Despite a chorus of skeptics, Musk built a car company called Tesla that turns out 5,000 high-end all-electric cars a year. Another Musk company sells solar power systems. But his lifelong passion is space. And when eBay bought PayPal in 2002, Musk started looking for ways to launch his new fortune into orbit.
I went to Russia to look at buying a refurbished ICBM, which is a very trippy experience. It was very bizarre. And when I tell people that, they're like, what?
Musk made three trips to Russia trying to buy an intercontinental ballistic missile called the Dnieper. His plan was bizarre. Put a greenhouse on the rocket, land it on Mars, and beam back the pictures.
It'll get people really excited, and that would recharge human space exploration. That was my original idea.
You just wanted to get people interested in space again?
Yes. Yes.
Capture the imagination?
Yes. That was the idea.
Turns out the Dnieper was so expensive, his idea never flew. So Musk decided that the only way to get an affordable rocket was to build it himself. And he started SpaceX.
The odds of me coming into the rocket business, not knowing anything about rockets, not having ever built anything, I mean, I would have to be insane if I thought the odds were in my favor.
Why even begin?
When something is important enough, you do it even though the odds are not in your favor.
How much of your personal fortune have you poured into this?
$100 million.
That's from what I've noticed, that's the theme that kind of pervades throughout his, you know, various entrepreneurial activities. He just believes, you know, enthusiasm can almost overcome, you know, any type of situation. Enthusiasm, engineering, and implementation. It seems, I think that's one of the things that allows hype to build around his companies a little bit.
Yeah, and I think. Oh yeah, I thought I was on mute. So, well, it's that mixed with what I find fascinating about him is that, I mean, it's everyone wants to be him. Everyone that dreams of being able to take on their whims and go run with it, and create a successful business around it, and innovate and design and produce, which is what everyone is so attracted to him for. But what I find interesting is that he has these visions of grandeur of established, you know, entrenched, you know, businesses. And then he just goes back to what he calls the first principles, and which is going down to the base roots of what everything is, and then out engineering and out, you know, just making things better and improving from there instead of the old entrenched way of you have your system set up and changes. It's sometimes easier to go back to the drawing board and start afresh. But that, you know, and that to go after these established businesses, you have to have large capital to be able to go and do it. But one of the quotes I had was, the normal way we conduct our lives is we reason by analogy. With analogy, we are doing this because it's like something else that was done, or it is like what other people are doing. With first principles, you boil things down to the most fundamental truths, then reason up from there. And that, to me, ties into what we're about, you know, liberty, libertarianism, and getting back to the roots of things and towards, you know, a more sustainable life and sustainable governance. And so that's why I think he ties into our program pretty well.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not Elon Musk, and I honestly, I haven't really done much study on him, but, you know, maybe – you know, he doesn't really care about, you know, whether his companies make money or not. Obviously, he needs the funds to do that. So, you know, obviously, starting PayPal and selling it to eBay, getting the funds, and trying to build the hype via Tesla and Solar City, getting the funds raised, so then he can, you know, fulfill his dream to go out of space. And maybe he just doesn't really care about whether these companies are making money for investors or not. And he just, maybe his goal is to just, you know, achieve that American dream where, you know, just, you know, trying to reestablish the identity of what America is all about, and is to, you know, be innovative and, you know, going, reaching outside of our boundaries and, just taking risks and, you know, just trying to become, you know, where we used to be, when we were like, you know, back in the old days of the United States of America. And maybe that's his goal, is to do that. And, you know, whether making money or not, you know, it doesn't matter. Corporatism doesn't bother him as much, but, you know, he just wants to achieve that dream of, you know, just reaching for the stars, reaching for the skies, and just trying to go back to what America is all about.
Yeah. Well, and also, and we'll probably hear more about this in the clip. He's almost, his concern is, his main interest is space, rocketry, and it's an interesting reason. I mean, his concern is to push innovation forward in order to eventually save humanity. I think it may be in this clip or another clip where, you know, eventually there's going to be a catastrophic event that most likely will take place on the planet. And, you know, his drive and vision is to be able to populate other, you know, other areas and, you know, ultimately allow humanity to thrive and to continue moving forward, which you don't hear a lot of people put their financial wherewithal behind the, you know, it's just such a, you know, a big idea to try and push forward.
Yeah, well, I think it's more of just a hobby for him.
You think so?
I think he sets up his other businesses to grow, to get to a point of be able to do a hobby, you know, his passion in life, and that's space exploration. He comes from a family of adventurers and entrepreneurs at the same time. I mean, his dad was an engineer and entrepreneur from South Africa. And when he was being raised, like, he told his kids, like, no, we're playing as Americans in South America, where we don't have housemaids or in the such. You are going to be like American kids that have to do the chores, mow the lawn, you know, sweep and, you know, just general chores around the house instead of hiring that stuff out. So I think it installed a good work ethic, and the guy just had a fascination of knowledge. So he's always just been interested in stuff. And I think those talents just coupled with, you know, growing up with his dad forming businesses all the time has just shown him, you know, gave him a good base to grow from there. And I think I would challenge you, Danny, that he doesn't care about these companies making money. I personally think they do. And if people really didn't think so, I don't see how they're not. I mean, the shares continually are on an upward trend. And
I'm not saying he doesn't care, but
well, I know. I'm just saying, but
I think it's more important to him to kind of push his, you know, boundaries. His dream is to you know, go to space, and you know, I think that's his main goal. And you know, he.
Well, I don't think SpaceX will ever be a publicly held company, and that's why, you know, it was important to win that NASA contract.
Yeah, there's another clip where if they didn't make that flight that was successful, like it was 4 years ago now, it was their fourth attempt, it was going to go bankrupt. It was going to close up because they had three unsuccessful attempts before that. It'll be interesting to see how this launch goes tomorrow as well, because it would be the second successful attempt in a row that they've had, and that would certainly build momentum. But at SpaceX – outfit was very close to going under. He said that he couldn't get any more funding if that fourth attempt failed.
And the main aspect is most of these rockets that are sent up, the main fuselage, you know, the the canisters that hold the main thrust to get out of the atmosphere is shut off and it's destroyed and it's unusable. And so that's what SpaceX's goal is, to mainly get to be able to reuse that, to not have to ditch that. Yep. And so you can enter and exit atmospheres at will. And that would make a pure any planetary travel feasible.
Yep. That's high on the agenda, is to reuse fuselage for SpaceX. I'll continue rolling this clip.
$100 million into something that you did not believe would work at the beginning.
Yes.
Musk truly believes that low-cost space exploration is essential to the survival of mankind.
I think it's important that humanity become a multi-planet species. I think most people would agree that a future where we are a spacefaring civilization is inspiring and exciting compared with one where we are forever confined to Earth until some eventual extinction event. You know, that's really why I started SpaceX.
SpaceX is housed in a sprawling factory near Los Angeles where fuselages for Boeing 747s used to be built. From its beginning 10 years ago, its goal has been revolutionary change in rocket and spacecraft manufacturing.
Now, tell me, what's that big piece right up there?
That's the second stage of a Falcon 9 rocket.
Instead of multiple companies building parts all across the country, SpaceX builds most of its rockets and spacecraft in-house, based on Musk's belief that it's more efficient and lowers costs. 1,400 engineers and skilled technicians work here, building engines, rockets, space capsules, creating mostly from scratch the thousands of components that are the guts of a rocket.
So what that means is raw metal comes in, and then we build the engines, the airframe, the electronics, and we integrate all of that together, and that's all done more or less under one roof.
Metal comes in one end of this factory.
Yeah.
Spaceships come out the other.
Yes.
Final assembly takes place at the Cape Canaveral launch pad.
If the margin's there and we don't then have margin to the fourth power, then it's fine.
Musk has college degrees in business and physics, but SpaceX is his first venture in aerospace. He bills himself as chief designer and chief technology officer.
How did you get the expertise to be the chief technology officer of a rocket ship company?
I do have a physics background. That's helpful as a foundation. And then I read a lot of books and talked to a lot of smart people.
You're self-taught?
Yeah. Well, self-taught, yes, meaning I don't have an aerospace degree.
So how did you go about acquiring the knowledge?
Well, I read a lot of books.
How is it
a lot of
possible?
And have a great team.
His team is a mixture. There are newcomers, mostly 30-something engineers, some of them straight out of college, and then there are the skilled technicians and aerospace veterans. Former NASA astronaut Garrett Reisman spent 3 months aboard the space station and flew on one of the final shuttle missions. He was brought in to help oversee the company's manned space work.
You know, I'm curious. You have so much background in engineering. You could have easily gotten a job at Boeing or at Lockheed, but you came here.
If you had a chance to go back in time and work with Howard Hughes when he was creating TWA, if you had a chance to be there at that moment when it was the dawn of a brand new era, wouldn't you want to do that?
And that is the overarching theme, I think, what you see in engineers between specifically Tesla and SpaceX. They attract top talent, innovative top talent that truly believe that they're going to change an industry. And, you know, specifically, I think the market in general, when you're talking about a stock, those two stocks, actually one's not traded like you guys said. So if you talk about Tesla, SolarCity is, you know, everything is baked into a stock price, certain, you know, hype. But, you know, the main ingredients in any company, the competitive advantage that company has are a couple of things: culture and talent. And what each company has done a really good job at, from what I've seen, is attracting almost Apple-like innovative engineering talent. So it's almost like working at a startup that people really believe that they're going to change, you know, the dynamic of each industry.
Yeah, it's That's what I think too. I think it's it'd be fantastic to go work over there. I'm sure you're putting in massive hours, but it's what you want in life. You know, it's the goals of higher calling per se.
Yep, I'll continue rolling.
I mean, that's why I'm here.
And that's why most of the engineers we met are here. Building spaceships is the chance of a lifetime. If you reach the point of having a successful manned flight, what will you have proven?
We're not doing it to prove anything. You know, we know it can be done. We're just trying to do it a little bit differently, a little bit faster, and to push the fence a little bit farther out.
And then we can all go, I mean, I want to go into space. I assume most people here do as well.
How many want to ride? Everybody wants to go.
I'm also sure.
First stage
Four,
engine sequence initiated.
3, 2, 1.
4 years after starting, SpaceX rolled out its first rocket, an unmanned booster called the Falcon 1.
Falcon has cleared the tower.
But the first three test flights failed to reach orbit.
We are hearing from the Launch Control Center that there has been an anomaly on the vehicle.
When you had that third failure in a row, did you think, I need to pack this in?
Never.
Why not?
I don't ever give up. I mean, I'd have to be dead or completely incapacitated.
It turned out that the third failure was caused by a 2-second glitch in the timing. 8 weeks later, Musk bet the company on another flight.
We have liftoff.
And this time around, everything worked.
Perfect.
Critics can't stop raving.
If that fourth launch hadn't worked, that would have been it. We would have not had the resources to mount a fifth.
You couldn't have gone out at that point.
Yes, death would have been, I think, inevitable because we did not have the resources to mount a fifth launch.
This is a tricky business.
Tricky.
Yeah, and that's what I was referencing. That was that fourth successful launch was really a make or break type of situation, and I got through it.
Yeah, I wish it wasn't so hard.
In 2010, SpaceX tested a larger, more powerful 9-engine rocket called the Falcon 9 and an unmanned cargo capsule known as Dragon. It was the first privately developed rocket designed to carry cargo and eventually astronauts to the space station.
MVAC ignition confirmed.
3.2 kilometers per second.
In its first test flight, the Dragon capsule performed flawlessly, orbiting the Earth twice before splashdown in the Pacific, the first time a private company had launched and recovered its own spacecraft.
And this is a historic spacecraft.
It is, yeah.
We came across the Dragon capsule while Musk was showing us around.
Sure. You know what I noticed about your cargo ship is that it has windows.
Yeah, absolutely. The windows are there in case there's an astronaut on board who wants to look out.
But people don't put windows in cargo ships.
That's right, exactly.
So what that tells me is that this was never intended to be only a cargo ship.
No, the Dragon was always designed to carry astronauts.
Musk says a manned version of the Dragon capsule will be safer than the space shuttle and a lot cheaper. Engineers are already designing escape rockets, life support equipment, and computer guidance systems. They were studying seating for 7 when we were there. Do you believe that your rocket will be the next American rocket to take an astronaut into space?
I believe that is the most likely outcome, yes.
That sort of confidence has not exactly endeared him to the space establishment or to his competitors. There are people who've been in the rocketry business for decades who say about you that you don't know what you don't know.
Well, I suppose that's true of anyone. How can anyone know what they don't know?
But when critics say you can't do this, your answer to them is,
we've done it.
He's done it in partnership with NASA, which has given SpaceX technical advice and a contract worth up to $1.6 billion, mostly for 12 cargo flights to the space station. But SpaceX's lack of experience bothers some NASA legends like Apollo astronauts Neil Armstrong and Gene Cernan. They've testified to Congress that the Obama administration's drive to commercialize space could compromise safety and eventually cost the taxpayers.
Now is the time to overrule.
Doesn't sound like they're a huge fan of privatizing or commercializing space travel. What do you guys think about that? Do you think that, because NASA, they really don't, going forward, they don't develop any of their technology. It's all outsourced to private enterprise. So that's a very, in theory, at least probably in, as far as, the three of us are concerned, the private market should be able to develop a better solution than a government entity, right?
Well, that's what I found fascinating was they gave them $1.5 billion and to do 12, trips to the space station.
The first of which is tomorrow.
Yeah, and I haven't seen the numbers, but I would guarantee, I bet probably one launch from NASA probably costs $1 billion. And then for them to funnel 12 launches privately, it just sheds a light on the government waste, in my opinion.
So it's a good, net, because to compete for that contract, there is there's competition bidding process of multiple companies, and SpaceX won. So really, you have, and we'll continue with this, you have essentially government employees who are associated with NASA for their whole life, trying to protect an institution that is, you could argue, in the long run, will probably be proven to be less cost efficient and effective than, a private free market solution, which is what SpaceX ultimately represents. Go ahead and continue here.
Oh, this administration's pledge to mediocrity.
There are American heroes who don't like this idea. Neil Armstrong, Gene Cernan have both testified against commercial spaceflight and the way that you're developing it. And I wonder what you think of that.
I was very sad to see that. Because those guys are, those guys are heroes of mine, so it's really tough. I wish they would come and visit and see the hardware that we're doing here. And I think that would change their mind.
They inspired you to do this, didn't they?
Yes.
And to see them casting stones in your direction.
It's difficult.
Did you expect them to cheer you on?
Certainly hoping they would.
What are you trying to prove to them?
What I'm trying to do is to make a significant difference in spaceflight and help make spaceflight accessible to almost anyone. And I would hope for as much support in that direction as we can receive.
President Obama made his support clear when he visited SpaceX's launch site just before Falcon 9's first test flight. As this animation shows, Elon Musk's next flight will be far more ambitious, carrying cargo all the way to the space station. It was scheduled to fly in February, but it's taken longer than expected to perfect the flight software. The flight will be a complicated rendezvous with a space station that is moving 17,000 miles an hour, 240 miles above the Earth.
Okay, so it looks like our burn performance is nominal.
In the SpaceX mission control, flight simulations are continuing. And if all goes well, SpaceX will begin routine space station cargo deliveries later this year. But the big prize is winning the NASA contract to build America's next manned spacecraft. And Elon Musk is facing stiff competition.
I'm probably not the guy that most people would bet on.
Who wins?
It's like a little kid fighting a bunch of sumo wrestlers. Usually the sumo wrestlers win. We're a little scrappy company. Every now and again, a little scrappy company wins. And I think this will be one of those times.
Yep, and that's pretty much, in my mind, the general sentiment behind all three companies. So I have a question for you guys. What do you think, you know, in the context of SpaceX, what do you think about, you know, a company like SpaceX really depending wholeheartedly on the government for its existence?
Well, I guess if it depends if NASA was going to do it on their own for these missions or not.
They weren't.
How are they going to get the supplies to the space station?
Well, Obama essentially canceled or took away all funding for 4 or 5 years ago for development and operations through NASA, and mandated that and this is, you know, something that's interesting to think about, mandated that they bid or contract out those services to third-party vendors, SpaceX won that contract.
Yeah, it's probably, I mean, I looked it up here. Over the history of the space program, the space shuttles, mm-hmm. Turns out it's anywhere between 1 to 1.5 billion over the lifetime per launch.
Per launch.
It cost NASA and our government.
So it's versus like 120 million.
Yes.
It's good cost savings.
Good kind of savings, but I mean, it goes into, well, you know, should we, our government being dealing in space in the first place, really? And we did that to compete with Russia, I guess, and, you know, either, I'm sure we first did it to try and weaponize space. It's generally what our governments do, untapped territory and scientific research, but to me, it doesn't bother me so as much as most government ventures, I guess. So, because that was what they said, and I haven't looked at the deal made. But if you're giving someone $1.5 billion, it's not just a grant or a loan given out. It was for a service to be rendered. So it's a space contracting program. And they won it. You know, I don't see much difference between all the military defense businesses out there. They most of their funds probably come from the government too. So it's I'm not happy about it. I don't think the government should be involved in a lot of things, but for a few looking towards space, the prolongation of humankind. I mean, there's been, like you said, Eric, extinction level tragedies that have happened throughout the history of the Earth that, you know, it's kind of on a cyclical program over many thousands of years. So it's not a bad thing. And it's, you know, it's who knows what new innovation and technology we can glean from traveling through space. I think it would be pretty exciting to go to another planet. Especially, I didn't realize that you could get there in 6 months. Blew my mind when I heard that. To get, or Mars. If you can get to Mars, when Mars is closest to Earth, if you time it right, you can get to fly there in 6 months at today's max speed rate. And Elon Musk predicts we could get that down to even 3 months time to get to Mars. Which is pretty crazy to think about. I would just say, hey, let's go to the moon first, Elon. Let's prove Neil Armstrong was actually there then. Maybe that's why he doesn't want the space exploration to go on.
There you go, Kirk.
Call that lone wolf out right there.
You want that? You got to... Good first step. They probably want to go.
I kind of agree. NASA is funding SpaceX, which is kind causing potentially taxpayer dollars and all that. But I don't know, which is, you know, as if we're going to be hardcore liberty, it's like, well, you know, we should be against that. But I mean, think about $1.5 billion is pennies compared to, you know, what our national deficit is right now and how much we're spending overall. And, you know, just with this, if they can use this money to really, really benefit society.
Are we losing Danny?
Danny, you might
keep cutting out, buddy.
You might want to rewind about
5 seconds. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. So, but like what I was saying, you know, it might cost taxpayer dollars, but you know, with the potential benefit of commercial space travel, you know, this can really benefit in a lot of ways, in my opinion. So. I don't see this as a necessary bad thing. You know, NASA's, you know, they're super slow, and it costs like $1 billion to launch one shuttle, while, you know, it costs $1 billion to launch 12 for SpaceX. And it's like, you know, I'm not very against that. So I was kind of shocked when, you know, Neil Armstrong and those heroes of Elon Musk, those kind of disagree with this thinking. I don't know if they're just trying to protect their identity, their fame, their history before being, you know, the heroes of going to the moon and all that. But, you know, I was just kind of surprised, like, why aren't they supporting this? You know, isn't space what it's all about? Aren't
the final, you know, frontier?
Right. Yeah.
Well, I look at it two ways, so, too,
you know,
I mean, one,
kind of odd by that.
You kind of
I definitely agree. But one, it's a good thing to unwind some of these mass bureaucratic industries. If this is a way to defund NASA and get that down to sustainable levels of maybe just, cutting NASA down to maybe a couple $1 billion a year instead of a huge, massive industry that they are. I look at that as a good thing, so it's money well spent to unwind NASA in a sense. And the other one was, what was it?
I'll add something.
I'm having a brain fart. All right.
It's actually, if you can say this is good on Obama. I mean, this is privatizing a government function, and you're seeing the free markets provide a more cost-effective solution. And I mean, there are many other areas that you could probably replicate this model. In
schools.
That's not really, you can't call that really fiscally liberal. That's a, you know, fiscally conservative, free market driven type of solution that we're talking about. And I have to tip my hat to him on that.
But we're assuming it's going to be successful. There hasn't been any shuttle
if it is
meetups yet. So it could end up being a total blunder. But
boondoggle.
So,
but if it is,
I wish I could remember what that other point was. Oh well,
I've got a clip while you're.
Yeah, but even if it fails, you know, as long as he's still trying, you know, I mean, anytime you're trying to innovate something, trying to do something that's just out of the ordinary and do something extraordinary, you can't be successful all the time. You're going to fail, you know, from time to time. You might have to fail a lot, but you know, we can clearly see that Elon Musk and SpaceX is like the only company that is really trying to achieve, these extraordinary measures that, we just kind of have to give them a chance. I mean, obviously, if 20 years down the line and, you know, just hopefully, it's not the case, but if we don't see any progress for years to come, then, yeah, we need to cut our losses. But, you know, Like, we gotta, you know, as a nation, sometimes we just gotta take our risks too, because really, there's no other entity that I know of that I see currently that is willing to go through this measure.
Well, I don't really look at it fully as privatizing a government institution, because it's still, whether the expenditures come from the government or the private sector, it's still flowing through the coffers of the government.
Sure.
But I mean, just think of this. If SpaceX wasn't out there, do you think Boeing would be asking for $1.5 billion to fly to the space station for 12 times?
No.
That's why SpaceX won it, because they could do it cheap. Yep. Boeing wouldn't even be remote. I would bet it would be, they'd be asking for $15 billion to start out with.
Oh, I think you're right.
And, yeah, but what was, God, what was it?
Were you still trying to remember what you wanted to say? Is it about, like, Neil Armstrong?
Yeah, it's going to be bugging me for a while. No, well, I keep leaning towards, but it wasn't anything of the sort.
I'm going to roll a clip on
television. All right, let's hit it.
All right, here we go.
From a manufacturing standpoint, the way we assemble this car, the way we put it together, all of this is essentially very different from another car. The Model S process stage is, it all starts with raw material. We have coils of aluminum, different gauges, different types of aluminum, maybe 50, 60 coils. We start the process by uncoiling the coils in a special machine we call blanking machine that allows to flatten the metal first and then cut it into flat pieces. We call them blanks. In addition to traditional blanking tools, we're using laser. And then with these pieces, we feed them to the press lines, these gigantic dies. And the press lines essentially form the panels, you know, boom. We are getting all of the parts necessary to make the body of the vehicle out of those gigantic machines. And then all of these parts, as they are finished, so to speak, are brought to the body shop.
The role of the body center is to take all the stamping panels that we make, and we bring all that together in one central location. And that's where we actually put the Model S together. We'll start and we do an underbody, which is the main floor system of the car. And then from there, we'll move to body sides. That's the internal reinforcement as well as the outer skin. And inside the framing area, we take the body sides, the underbody, and the front end of the car, and we actually marriage it all together. One of the most unique things about this body center is we actually have five different overall joining methods for the body shell. We use adhesive, we use self-piercing rivets, we have cold metal transfer, conventional resistance welding, as well as a new Delta Spot welding system. When a body leaves the body center, it's actually a full completed body shell ready to be prepped and painted.
You have a gigantic robot.
So what you're saying is don't ever hit a Tesla.
What's that?
Don't ever hit a Tesla is what
Why? Because it'll shatter?
Or it's not going to be cheap.
Because it's a unified body, so you hit it. You gotta
and the specialized welding's like, yeah, I'm not going to be able to fix that.
Yeah, that might be a... I wonder how they do that, because, I mean, in looking at the video, they basically, it's a unified aluminum frame, essentially.
What they do. Yeah, I didn't even think of that. It's always just fascinated me about the transmission that they have. And, you know, to me, the most important thing is, I mean, these electric motors go from 0 to 60 so fast that, I mean, at least the Tesla motors does, that you know, to me, the biggest thing would be handling and not necessarily getting that from 0 to 60 in 2 seconds now, not just working on the speed, but I didn't think of all the technology that goes in just to the body itself, which seems unnecessary, but innovative is what I like. I mean, but all that just seems rather unnecessary, but cool.
Yeah, that could be.
It's conveyed to the paint shop. You have multiple pre-treatment, primer, base coat, clear coat. All of this is supplied with robots that have a special ability to paint in a very clean environment. You get a beautiful painted body that's coming to General Assembly, where we have these super elegant robots we call Smart Cart, where every cart is essentially moving through the factory by itself.
This factory is
it follows a magnetic strip, and
too.
Essentially
fully automated.
The cart is being assembled from inside out.
Which eventually should yield significant cost savings.
We're utilizing automation to the fullest. We have a variety of robots, from the teeny little ones to huge ones that are able to move the entire body itself. One of the robots that I'm always very impressed to look at is the one that puts the seats inside the Model S. And the same robot is able to change tools, go from a seat handling device to putting the windshield, actually grab the windshield, put some glue around it, and then put the windshield onto the car, as well as do the rear glass of the vehicle. So talk about versatility here.
We have most everything we need right here in-house. We do the majority of our stamping panels ourselves. We have design engineers here at the facility, so we're very nimble and very quick at what we do.
Currently, it takes about 3 to 5 days for a Model S to go from raw material all the way to being finished on the bamboo line. It's magnificent. It's like a piece of art. We constantly try to improve process efficiency. We want to push the boundaries of what can be done by robots versus humans. So it's a constant evolution. This Tesla factory is the future of the USA and the world. That's the way I see it. We are building the future here. That's how proud I feel about this.
Which is kind of the general gist of his companies, building the future.
Yeah, and that's what it sounds to me, because I didn't know about all this stuff, and what he was describing there was pretty, you know, I know most manufacturers are getting that way, but it sounds like this could be more of a stepping stone into that than ever. To me, that's why everything would be designed that way, so it's very minimal human interaction with the actual building of the car.
I have
human interaction, just the design. But no, yeah, that's good.
We're running up towards what we'd like to be the end, but I have a couple of clips that I think be interesting to listen to and talk to briefly on, maybe a couple minutes after each one. The first of which is just kind of an overview of Solar City. I need to find it. And I think from what we've heard from SpaceX, Tesla, there's a uniform vision, but it's interesting. And Solar City, I think, is an interesting concept. And, you know, I didn't really know too much about it until reading and watching various clips. So I'm going to roll this one here.
If you had the choice between paying more for dirty power or paying less for clean power, what would you do? The sun produces more energy in one day than the entire U.S. population consumes in a year.
The spark of Solar City came from a deep concern over climate change. We looked at the way that energy was being delivered, and we realized that solar, and especially the part of delivering solar to the end customer, was being largely neglected.
Almost all of the energy that Earth receives comes from the sun, and it really takes a very small amount of Earth's surface area to generate all the electricity that humanity could ever need.
SolarCity has come up with a disruptive solution. We can now install solar equipment for free and just sell the electricity. And that electricity costs less than if you were to buy electricity from the utility.
Everything that SolarCity does is to enable a cleaner, more affordable alternative to one's utility bill. The challenge and the opportunity that we had was to build a massive delivery mechanism for installing and deploying solar at a scale that has never been seen before in this country.
It is fantastic to watch our customers' expressions when they turn on the system for the first time and see the meter move backwards. You can see their sense of independence and controlling their own electricity. SolarCity's vision is to give every homeowner of every business an option for electricity that is cheaper and cleaner.
When we first start with a customer, we engage in a minimum 20-year relationship.
This 100-year-old electricity infrastructure needs to change.
What's happening in this really exciting transformation will result in rooftop solar being seen everywhere. I think SolarCity has been successful because of the fact that we have a long-term perspective on this problem.
SolarCity is showing that there's a path here to having economically viable, sustainable energy.
Solar is finally ready to become a mainstream power source for all of the people in the world.
I think the idea of SolarCity is pretty cool.
I agree. Cheaper energy, free solar panels. Probably looks pretty sweet on my rooftop, too.
There is that.
Until you get a re-roof the house, and what do you do with the solars on top of it? But anyways, I don't know. I'm sure they'll work that out.
You know, sometimes I kind of wonder if, you know, with SolarCity and Tesla and SpaceX, I sometimes wonder if, you know, they will, like, try to use, like, combine, you know, parts from, you know, one company and use it to another. So for, like, an example, maybe eventually, you know, they'll probably use, like, solar panels and then just slap it on the Tesla. And I don't know, maybe it'll run efficiently or not. And I don't know if that's ever crosses their mind. I'm sure they thought about it. I'm not sure if they're doing anything like that about it. But, you know, that I think that's a pretty, you know, that's pretty efficient way of doing it since these companies are somewhat related in a way. I don't know if you guys ever thought about it, or am I just kind of way out there?
No, I've actually thought about, not so much with SpaceX, but with Tesla and SolarCity, the idea of manufacturing good batteries. Because the issue with solar is, I mean, maybe you can generate electricity from sunshine, but you need to store it for the time of the day that it's cloudy, or, you know, for the evening, or, and maybe you'd like to transport it, you know, eventually. And I've read articles on this, you know, why not use these batteries or these cars as portable energy sources? So you could pull energy off of solar panels, store them in batteries, you know, maybe have a battery generated from the Panasonic, Tesla, mega factory on the side of your house. So you could store that solar energy during the evening hours and have an efficient way to store and then distribute.
I think
relate the two.
Yeah.
Let's first just start with charging a Tesla from a SolarCity panel.
Sure.
I don't even think you could do that. So that would be the best way to combine it, is the market say, well, yeah, you put SolarCity up there and boom, you have a Tesla, you can charge your own car. But I don't think that's even near capable of doing so yet.
Or using the car as a way to store that energy and, you know, push it back into the, or it doesn't necessarily even need to be a battery in the car. It could be, you know, a battery that's in a, you know, in a container on the side of the house that stores that energy, but it's produced by a Tesla factory.
Well, I was going to say, I think what they're trying to do right now is trying to store the energy in a battery efficiently. So, and once they can do that, then they can start. And I think there's a high cost to it for them not being able to do that right now. That's why Teslas are so expensive. But once they are able to achieve that feat, then I think, they talked about wanting to sell the Teslas for like $30,000 or under. But once it can effectively store these energy, then they can start selling these cars at a lower price. And I think that's what they're trying to do. I'm not sure if they're trying to they're having SolarCity do it or if Tesla's completely doing their own thing. But I think that's what they're trying to do right now.
Well, every technology costs a lot at first. Look at how much VHS machines cost when they first came out. Same with DVD players and Blu-ray, and now you can all get it. You could get a VHS player for free on a corner somewhere. And a CD player is really cheap now, and that's all because of they're just purely made by automation. And so if Tesla has designed their company from the ground floor that way, the direction of price is only going to plummet in time.
Yeah, I think with Tesla, their stuff are factors, but a driving factor towards their success is their focus on their battery technologies, because you can use those technologies in a bunch of
many more industries. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe you could tie in with SolarCity, but I mean, there are so many applications for that, that could be the real revenue generator behind Tesla.
What do you think about, I don't know if SolarCity does as such, but Tesla is fairly open source, predominantly open source, I believe. I guess I'm just taking certain words for it, but I don't know what's open source and what's, trademarked or patented, but I don't think they really go out there and patent much of that stuff. It's pretty much open source where Elon Musk says, yeah, if you want to take it, think you can do better. Go ahead.
And I think that's what Toyota is doing right now.
Taking their technology?
Yeah,
you're right.
They're patenting a ton of stuff.
Yeah, they don't patent any of their stuff, it looks like. Yeah, they believe in open source and all their technologies.
Yeah, so to me, that's when the main corporations and business sense that America has, that's totally asinine. I mean, that's totally ridiculous. You're losing out on market share, competition, breeding competition, which to me only strives for more innovation. And so to me, it's a good thing. And I find it fascinating that such a innovative company would do such a thing as open source. As you know, I think down the road we'll actually have a podcast probably on open sourcing eventually. But so we can get into this a little later. But yeah, I just think it's pretty fascinating to hear that. I don't think many people know that it's open source.
And actually, I wasn't aware of this, but I'll take the last couple paragraphs. It's like a paragraph and a half from Elon Musk's post on the Tesla website. This was June 12, 2014. This kind of just wraps up. There are multiple paragraphs before this, but he says, we believe that Tesla, other companies making electric cars and the world would all benefit from a common, rapidly evolving technology platform. Technology leadership is not defined by patents, which history has repeatedly shown to be small protection indeed against a determined competitor, but rather by the ability of a company to attract and motivate the world's most talented engineers. We believe that applying the open source philosophy to our patents will strengthen rather than diminish Tesla's position in this regard. So they have full open source engineering philosophy.
I get what he's saying, but at the same time, it's kind of arrogant too. I mean, he needs to, you know, the risk is he needs to protect himself. I mean, obviously, if Toyota gets a hand of, you know, his patents, I mean, even though he's inventing all these, but Toyota now owns these patents, then, you know, down the line, you know, years down the line, what can he do if, you know, I mean.
I mean, great, make a mockery of the patent system then, that someone could actually develop it and have it public and obviously proven that it wasn't developed by Toyota, and Toyota go out there and suck up the patents. It just shows the mockery of the system that's been created around us.
Yeah, but like if, you know, you basically have to shoot for the moon every single time you create a new technology to constantly beat your own technology. So yeah, they can patent all they want, but you know, you have to, Elon Musk have to always take a step or two above what he created previously in order to make this work. And you know, the risk is, you know, yeah, I agree the patent system sucks, but it, you know at the same time it exists, and you know, him disregarding this, I feel like that's he's really exposed to himself that you know, risking his company if, you know, if they can't come up with anything that's innovative for a time being, and then, you know, potentially losing the fundings that he needed, which definitely halts his companies from advancing.
Yeah, but it's that general mystique he has about himself that that he's striving for a better future and better technology, and there's no better way to do that than what he's doing in a sense, other than, I mean, what would you say about the guy if he was just hoarding all this stuff and creating these massive innovations, charging an obscene amount of money, taking control, say you started even taking control over the automotive industry, even the energy sphere, and he controlled the pants of everything, and I mean, Bill Gates could end up looking like peanuts.
I know he's not doing that right now, but you know, with other companies like Toyota and other large automobile companies, they'll take advantages, and you know, they'll do that. They'll take his ideas and, you know, go up against them, and then, you know, they'll use it against them, and then try to, you know, control the automobile industry that way. You know, I just think that, you know, my opinion, it's somewhat arrogant for him to not patent some of this stuff. It's just poor risk management in my view. Because you should patent some of this stuff, whether you disagree or not. It's just, there's just so much risk to it. And, you know, if they lose this technology, even though he created it, I mean, that could just really tank his company. I don't know. That's just my opinion. Know. You can disagree. I can understand you guys disagree with this, but
no, I don't.
You know, I'm more skeptical, and you know, it's. And I understand he likes to shoot the moon all the time, but you know, yeah. In case of, you know, it doesn't, one scenario doesn't reach the moon, then will that be it? You know, is he crashing down?
So. And to me, it's He's very idealistic, you know, in most of his endeavors and philosophies, and that's just that's another example of his idealism. Yeah, and I think I agree, Danny. The corporate and business landscape can crush ideologues, and that's a concern with what he's, you know, when you're talking about open source or just letting your ideas. You know, throwing them out there and allowing other companies to patent what you have, and basically saying, if you're Toyota, yeah, we have the patent. You can't do that, and that's a competitive disadvantage. And that's basically what you're saying, right?
Well, yeah, I would say much. Try me in a jury court system.
Bring Kirk Pettis in as your lawyer. All right, I have
let my peers judge that I owe you money. Then
I have one final clip we can talk about for a few minutes and then wrap it up. And this is
jury's rigged too. So
yeah, this is
throw that out there. But go ahead, throw that clip.
This is in stark contrast to his idealism. It's it's interesting. And I think there's a commercial here that I'll have to.
It's about the singularity?
Yep. What intro music.
I don't think most people understand just how quickly machine intelligence is advancing. It's much faster than almost anyone realizes, even within Silicon Valley. And certainly outside Silicon Valley, people really have no idea.
Why is that dangerous?
I mean, if there's a super intelligent, particularly if it's engaged in recursive self-improvement, if there's some digital super intelligence, and its optimization or utility function is something that's detrimental to humanity, then it will have a very bad effect. It could be just something like getting rid of spam email or something, and it's like concludes, well, the best way to get rid of spam is to get rid of humans, you know.
But why would we lose
the source of all spam? You know,
I know, like, we've all watched HAL in 2001, but why would we lose control of our machines? There are no data points showing that our connection to machine has ever been loosened.
Actually, I think the thing to do would be to plot the progress of digital intelligence versus time, and then to maybe curve fit or extrapolate that progress and see where that leads.
But you're talking about machines that are not just intelligent, but have intentionality. Is that right?
They have the intention of their utility function,
which
will
is what
be
we programmed in, right?
Yes.
Okay.
But it can have unintended consequences.
I just love how he talks. It just sounds like Zen sometimes.
Just calm.
Oh, quit talking about me, Danny. No.
You too, I guess.
No, I agree wholeheartedly with it. I think that's a concern that needs to be watched over in the future. Machines creating themselves. Machines that upgrade themselves, and once that begins, there's no way to, there's not a very good way to slow that trend, and it would be very exponential.
There's actually, I have another one too, which probably, well, I don't think I started it.
Maybe you didn't.
Let's see here. That he goes a little bit more into that. I'm going to play this. It's short. But I agree. I mean, it's interesting to hear him talk about the perils of technology when he's such an evangelist.
Entrepreneur and real-life Tony Stark, Elon Musk, is making headlines with an ominous tweet about the dangers of artificial intelligence. Musk tweeted Saturday, "Worth reading Superintelligence by Bostrom. We need to be super careful with AI, potentially more dangerous than nukes." The first half of that tweet refers to Nick Bostrom, a Swedish philosopher who's written extensively about artificial intelligence and his book, Superintelligence, Paths, Dangers, Strategies. According to the summary on Amazon, the book deals with the questions of what happens when artificial intelligence surpasses humans and whether AI will help or hurt us. In that context, it seems like Musk comes down on the hurt us side of that debate with his comparison to nukes, which was quickly picked up by a number of outlets. Mashable called Musk's tweet a mini rant and wrote the tweet about nukes might be the most controversial technology statement of his career. And CNET pointed out this isn't the first time Musk has voiced his concerns about the future of AI.
I'd like to just keep an eye on what's going on with artificial intelligence. I think there's potentially a dangerous outcome there. There's been movies about this, you know, like Terminator.
Yes, both of those outlets also pointed to futurist and Google exec Ray Kurzweil as Musk's counterpoint, as Kurzweil sees the development of AI as a good and inevitable thing.
The bottom line is we are one human-machine civilization. This technology has already expanded who we are, and it's going to go into high gear when we get to the steep part of the exponential.
Musk also comes down on the negative side of that idea, the merger of human and machine, tweeting, "Hope we're not just the biological bootloader for digital superintelligence. Unfortunately, that is increasingly probable." So from Musk's perspective, it seems if we're not careful, we're looking at one of two options. Either superintelligent future robots wage war to annihilate humanity, a la Terminator, Or superintelligent future robots enslave humanity and use us as a battery, like in The Matrix. Either way, Musk doesn't have much to be fatalistic about, as his Tesla electric car franchise is now set to expand with a new battery factory in the U.S.
So it's a contrast to his optimistic view on technology.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Well, it's possible. I mean, if you can imagine it, I would never say it's impossible to, you know, to actually realize it either. So,
there's a lot of people trying to realize it, i.e., Ray Kurzweil and people of the like. But I mean, that's a goal of a lot of people, is to find immortality, to be able to put your mind in a robot eventually.
Yeah, people like Kurzweil.
To live forever.
People like Kurzweil, and even I think Musk, believe that this is something that's potentially
doable
within our lifetime.
Yeah. And that's could be. I mean, it enters a quandary. I mean, like, if that's actually possible, how, you know, can you really stop it? Probably not, and why would you? As a libertarian or liberty mindset, would you utilize force to stop such things?
Well, I would think you would use whatever mechanism to
evolution.
Stop those things.
Well, exactly. So it's
but that goes against the non-aggression principle.
Most definitely, it does.
Yeah.
But as long as, I mean, but it would change the ball game of liberty principles, is what I'm saying. To have enter a point to where you can create beings that maybe don't have the conscious ability to have the choice of harming others. To where they, I mean, it could be. Makes sense to a computer's mind that, all right, that harm should be done in this case. So it's like, how could you program that in to cure such an event or have such a kill switch per se? So yeah. I don't know. You know, the future will be interesting. There's no doubt about it. And Elon Musk is definitely one of many that are bringing us there. Do you guys have anything else that I want to wrap it up with?
That sounds
good.
Yeah,
I just want to add, it's good that he's bringing it up because, you know, he's obviously, you know, one of the top echelons in technology, if not the top echelon in technology. And just hearing that from him just gives us assurance that, you know, yeah, we got to limit our abilities at the same time and don't go and too crazy about it, and, you know, got to establish controls in place and things like that so that, you know, robots and drones and whatnot can't, you know, take over us, you know. So hearing that from one of the top people from the industries, you know, it gives us a little bit more assurance. So I just kind of want to add that to it.
Of people worrying and being careful and what
that's a huge,
damage they can create?
Well, that's a huge challenge, I think, and I agree with Danny. I mean, we're gonna see. I mean, we have artificial intelligence growing at an exponential rate, but the engineering challenge, I think, is to contain the ability for that intelligence to trump human, you know, intelligence, and eventually, you know, end in a situation that Musk is talking about, and I think that's a pretty difficult problem to resolve. It'll be interesting to see what kind of, I mean, essentially, I think what Danny's talking about, controls are needed to make sure that that's kept in place. But there are a lot of different actors involved in the process, and some may, I mean, there's always that battle between what, you know, you may consider to be altruistic or good and not necessarily good. And So there are people who may want to circumvent those controls. But interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, I think we live in an interesting day and age where, you know, the old model was, you know, you got to go to college to learn on what to do. But I think the most innovative companies out there in this new digital technology age is being developed on the job sites and being utilized internally. So, and then it doesn't hit the colleges or the educational spheres for years down the road. And so there's always that catch-up phase that we're entering. And as technology keeps exponentially expands, that by the time you learn that, there's already all the new stuff out there of being utilized that these companies are doing. So it's an interesting time we live in, and it definitely takes some great minds to innovate and fantasize about future endeavors and to have the will to do so. And I think Elon Musk puts his money where his mind is, and it's fun to see. And future, I hope I have a Tesla someday. I'll put it at that.
Me too.
So you guys have anything else to say?
I just appreciate your feedback since you're from the future and you see this.
That is right. There's not too much to worry about other than focus on liberty.
Well said.
With that, it's been number 39, folks, with Liberty Southwest, our 39th podcast. Tonight, it has been Danny Ning, Eric Taylor, and myself, Kirk Pettis. Hope you all have a good day and good night.
Have a good one.
Adios, mofo.